So I'm in New York for the Comic Con here, the big fall Comic Con in New York, and excuse me, a little hiccup. And there are a series of screenings that are going on. There's a lot of manga stuff that's going on, a lot of anime that's at this festival, as well as the sort of the traditional American, comic book work. And I'm hardly an expert. I'm really a tourist in the field, but I've always been interested in it, and recreationally, I find it a lot of fun. But one of the things they're screening tomorrow is a Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl. This is already out. I mean, I think it came out in 2009 or something like that, but it's about to get a larger push. Japanese movie, kind of a parody, I guess, or a movie that has somewhat subtle commentary about Japanese society in it. It's a gore fest film, and so here, I'll be going to church in the morning and turning around, walking down the street, and going to see that movie. But it looks really fun, and that's where a lot of these, a lot of the movies are that are coming out this month. For example, Buried with Ryan Reynolds. At first glance, the movie didn't seem all that exciting to me. I like Ryan Reynolds. I think he does a great job, by the way, with his comic book characters, and looking forward to seeing what he's going to do with Green Lantern, right? He's Green Lantern. But he's a guy who's kidnapped and put in a coffin, has 90 minutes to come up with $5 million. And I talked to a friend of mine, Willie Waffle, who's a film reviewer. He gave it four waffles, said it was excellent. And so you add that with the Last Exorcist movie that came out, which was pretty good. It was a lot of fun. And some of these other recent horror films, which people are raving about. It seems like a good month for that kind of film. A lot out there to choose from as we work our way up to Halloween, just like tomorrow night when we talk about Holy Ghosts and Field of Screams Sunday night on Coast to Coast. What are you going to talk about this hour? Let's get back to open lines. We'll start with David in Tennessee, who said he's vegan, but he doesn't have a problem with killing animals. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so what about David? So he's a you're a vegan, David, but you were hearing our conversation earlier about animals, some we love, some we hate, some we eat.
Yes, sir, Mr. Punnett. I really wanted to get Mr. Herzog's reaction to the idea that, that there are people that choose to change their alter their diet, not out of reasons out of animal compassion. Although I'm compassionate with animals, and by the way, I'm a cat and a dog owner, so I don't know how that plays into your equation. But no, I decided about 2.5 years ago on this path, and slowly out of weaning things off, I became a vegan. And it's all based on physics, is my logic. Okay.
How's that? Tell me what.
Well, the first thing is, everything that has life on this planet begins with the fusion reactor that flows across the sky every day. And that sun, the star, a star, sends subatomic particles, waves of energy particles, and all the plants on the planet track it with their leaves are like little antennas, that track the sun across the sky. And they ingest that energy. And then let's say you're a meat eater and you're going to eat like an organic cow, let's say, that only eats grass, okay? And then you're going to have a burger. The cow's going to eat the grass, which eats the sunshine, and then you're going to gnaw on its leg. So what you're doing is you're filtering yourself down away from the source, and you're taking a narrow bandwidth because grass is a very limited source of energy, okay? So I decided to move closer to the source and do away with the middleman, okay? And say that instead of being a secondhand consumer of grass, I'm going to be a firsthand consumer of a wide variety of plants so I can be closer to the source, which is the sun. Secondly, in the law of physics, everything that's on this planet and that makes us up and everything else began its journey from the center of a star to begin with. So all atoms on this planet once went through that fusion reactor process and became a star, exploded, spread their debris all over the universe, and now it's here on this Earth being sucked into another star again. So we are made of a star, and we eat a star. That's the simple logic of it all. And if the further you get away from that source, the more diluted it is. So that's my logic of being a vegan. And the last thing I weaned myself off of was eggs. So I had free-range chickens. I lived off the grid. And predators would, you know, try to wipe out my chickens all the time. Coyotes, raccoons, snakes. And I'd have poisonous snakes once in a while. And I don't have a problem at all with killing any of those animals. In fact, recently, the last thing I shot at was a coyote. But and this is because it fits into my logic process.
I hear that type of, I think you've got a fairly, you know, watertight process for you. I commend it. It's as good as any, and that's a lot of what is in Hal Herzog's book, as some of these ways in which we find around the things we don't want to deal with, or to find ways to come to terms with them, sometimes through convoluted means or emotional means. That one is very fairly logical. So thanks, David. We'll go on to Richard, who's hanging on Wildcard Line on Coast to Coast. Richard?
Hey, Ian, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Where you want to take us?
Well, I want to take you someplace, but before we do it, I'm curious about something. You're in New York now, right?
I am.
And you're broadcasting where, at a WOR?
No. I'm at the Premier Radio Network studios.
Oh, okay, because I'm saying I'm listening to you on a I'm in New York, out on Long Island. I'm listening to you on a radio station from Cleveland. I said, this is really strange. They don't broadcast from New York.
Yeah, WOR doesn't carry the weekend coast to coast yet. We hope that they will. But I could go over there, I suppose, even if they didn't carry it. But yeah.
Anyway, to get to the point of thing, you the beginning of the last, I didn't hear the show, but the beginning of the last half hour, you summed up the guy's book in something. You said something about the book.
Right.
What was that? Can you just restate it again? Because I'm, you know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm starting to lose it a little bit.
Are you talking about Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat? Yes.
Right. Yeah. You
Why summed up the psychological complexities of our relationship with animals, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like what the last caller was saying, you know, he has no trouble killing animals, but he's a vegan, you know, and this, you know, the whole thing. At any rate, do you ever read the Bhagavad Gita?
No, I know of it. I mean, I've read from it, but I've never read it cover to cover.
Okay, so I think that everybody does this on a certain level. I mean, I just recently, within the last 10 years, realized that there's sentience in everything, you know. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, my parents had dogs, and I loved dogs. They were really great. And then when I got older, I don't have any pets. I lived in the city for 30 years. And then my mom, who lived out on Long Island, had a couple of cats and some birds.
Right.
And wasn't very socially involved with people. I'm not going to get into that, but she wasn't. She said she liked animals. She didn't like people because she internalized everything that they said. She didn't know how to, you know, let go in one ear and out the other.
Okay.
So at any rate, I thought, you know, I tried to get her involved socially. And she said, no, I have everything I need with the cats and the birds. And I thought, well, too bad. She's, you know, off of it a little bit. I started living out here after she passed away and started taking care of the animals. And very slowly, because I used to say when she was in the nursing home going, you know, dying of cancer, I used to say to the cats, I used to say, look, when she goes, you guys go. You know, that's it.
Right.
As I had no love or anything or caring about them. But this one little cat played me like a fiddle. He got up on top of the dining room table. And when I came in from the garage after, you know, seeing my mom in the nursing home fading away slowly but surely, I was devastated. You know, I'd come in from the garage and open the door right to the dining room. There's a little cat sitting on the table going meow, meow, meow. And I would just pick it up just to pet it and, you know, feel close to something because I was, you know.
Sure.
And slowly but surely, things started happening. For instance, the cat, I learned, besides, it meowed when it wanted to be fed. It meowed when it wanted to have its cat box cleaned. And it meowed for some other reason I couldn't figure out until I picked it up one time and I realized that the cat needed love from time to time. And I didn't like doing that in the beginning. And then I learned very quickly that instead of holding the cat for 15 minutes, if I walked him in the bathroom and let him see me holding him in the mirror, because cats, you know, dogs look at themselves in the mirror and sometimes they bark. Cats kind of are oblivious to their own reflection in the mirror. But, you know, I used to bring him into the, because when he got enough love, he'd kind of squirm around. He wanted, you know, put me down and he'd go his own way. And so the little cat needed love. You know, it was very strange. I couldn't figure that out. I came home one time and he's in the hallway and he's blocking the hallway. And he's going, meow, meow, meow. I check the food thing. There's plenty of food. I check the litter box. It's clean. And so I realized he wanted just to be picked up and loved, and he needed that.
Right.
So I started giving him that, but I started realizing I was getting something by it too, which I didn't really realize. That's just in the beginning.
Right.
Then weird things happened. I watched TV. I watched a couple hours in the evening, you know, and he would come into the room when he wanted attention, and sometimes I'd be engrossed in a show, and I wouldn't give it to him. Well, the cat, Ian, goes between me and the television set, sits down with his back towards me. And I'm saying, why is the cat doing that? It's just sitting there. It's not watching TV, and it's got its back towards me. I looked at the cat, and I said, are you shunning me? The cat looked over its shoulder and just looked straight at me and just kind of looked away. And I started realizing little things. Same things with the birds.
Right.
There are birds. There are four birds, and cats and birds don't get along. My mother never let the birds, you know, the cat in with the room where the birds were.
Right.
But the cat knows that I like the birds. I go into, I can't give them the attention that she gave them, but I sing to them every morning. I sing to them every night, you know, just because animals need some attention. So I give them a little, you know, good morning to you, good morning to you, you know, thing. So the cat realized that there's an affinity that I like these birds. It picked up on that to the point where I knew the communication between me and the cat now, or there's no need for words, and the cat understands me, and I understand the cat, and I love the cat dearly.
Right.
But it's funny, because when I go in and I sing to the cat, the birds, he knows who the last bird is that gets sung to, and he sits right by the cage. Because
and he wants to eat that one.
He wants his turn, too.
Yeah.
So
well,
the point of this whole thing is there's sentience in all these animals. You and I and everybody else drives around in Ferraris. Animals, they ride around little red wagons, but it's the same sentience.
I'll go along. I think there's some truth to that. And I thank you, Richard. I think I'm going to get a couple other callers in here, but I think that the level of awareness may change. And of course, you know, part of our measure of sentience is whether or not that animal is aware of yesterday and tomorrow. And that's one ways of measuring it too, is are they only aware of what's going on in the moment, or is part of their awareness over time? It's actually an interesting argument that's being explored in this prequel to Planet of the Apes. And as I think I mentioned before on Coast to Coast, I was in Vancouver. I was on the set of this new movie, which is technically a prequel, but it's called Rise of the Apes. And it's about this one ape that is sort of the one that starts it all, the first domino in what would lead eventually to Planet of the Apes. And what it is, it's not about intelligence. It's not about an ape raising its level of intelligence. It's all about an ape raising its level of awareness. And I think that's really kind of the spooky part, that if animals were really aware of the dimensions of the maltreatment that was going on around them, how they might revolt. And that's what this, you know, this ape is evolves into a kind of a level of self-awareness, which he then teaches to the other apes. And that begins the revolution. Jim is in Everett, Washington, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Jim?
Yes.
Hey.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, take the subject a little further, different. Talk about the funny face gang, smiley face gang.
Right. Oh, you mean the smiley face killers, right?
Yeah, killers.
Right.
If you'd had any update, because we just had, right north where I live, up in Bellingham, a case which fits that criteria exactly.
Tell me about that. Tell me about what you saw, heard about.
It's all over the news up here. But we have an 18-year-old child.
Yeah.
Went away from, a perfect A student. He went away from home to go to college. 3 weeks later, he's missing.
Yeah.
He went to a party that night. And he left the party early to go back to his dorm. Well, the university's not, like as what the police says, the university's not too far from the town. And the town is not too far from the dock area.
Right.
And the dock's not too far from the mills. Well, 12 to 14 days later, they found his body floating in a lagoon. And they searched everywhere for this kid. The autopsy shows no signs of trauma, murder of any way. His wallet, his money, his everything he owns was on him.
Right.
And right now they're doing a toxicology. But everything they said so far, and I took notes before we were doing it when you were talking about the funny face murderers or anywhere, you know?
Not funny face, smiley face.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And everything fits. The young kid leaves the party by himself, straight A student, and he disappears.
Yeah,
and they find him murdered, or not murdered, I can't say that. They find him dead.
Right.
And an autopsy, the doctor said he was been in the water the whole time, but they wouldn't say that he had drowned.
Right. You know, that there's a consistency to that, and it is something about which I think you are right to wonder. It's too easy, I think, for police. It's a nice way to wrap things up just to say, well, he was drunk and he fell into the water and he drowned. And that may be what's happened with a lot of these cases. But there were some of these other things about the smiley face itself. Were there any of these scenes, at any of the scenes of the crime, did anybody mention anything about the graffiti?
They haven't mentioned a darn thing.
Have you looked into it yourself? Have you gone by?
No. I just keep. I'm an avid listener to the radio, also
the
police radios and the scanners.
Yeah, and you're hearing it that way. You know, Christy Peel was the reporter that was working on it. She went on Good Morning America and has been talking about it. I believe she's still working on her book on this. And there's that one piece of this, the idea of a smiley face being found at some of the sad recoveries, where she said last time she was on the air that she's begun to suspect that a lot of people are going after a boy is discovered in the water and painting a smiley face nearby. And so that's becoming an unreliable aspect of the story is whether or not there's graffiti. So she sort of backing off about that, is thinking that that's an indicator. So it doesn't really matter if nothing's been mentioned. So we'll just have to keep an eye on it. By all means, when you hear more or you ask good questions, let us know what they tell you in terms of answers, and I'll pass that along to Christy Peel. Patrick is on a tugboat on a wild card line before we get to the bottom of the hour on Coast to Coast. Patrick?
Hey, good morning.
Where are you on your tugboat right now?
Norfolk Harbor, Virginia.
All right. Glad to have you. And so where are you going to take us?
I tell you, just get it out of the way first. I love animals, all animals. But being my engineer and I, and many occasions over the years have discussed in depth purchasing a small coastal freighter that's capable of being a processing ship and, doing some good for poverty-stricken countries. You know, it's not a nice thing to probably say with the great people talking tonight, but, they euthanize these dogs and cats and other animals daily all across the U.S. And, there's plenty of people there that are just starving.
Put flesh on the bones, if you will, about your idea. You're talking about maybe getting all the cats and dogs that people don't want here, transporting them off the coast of some country that's desperate for meat protein and are willing to eat cats and dogs without a blink, and having sort of a floating abattoir, as it were, right? Do I get the idea?
Exactly. We'd have to get the Humane Society to go for it. But, if people like that would be understanding to the thought of feeding poverty-stricken countries at a great rate, we'd, because you got to pay for fuel and crew,
I see what you're saying. You have to read this book. Go grab Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat, and take a look, see whether or not you aren't, like, exactly the kind of person that they're talking about, people who are thinking out of the box, wondering, why is this true? It's an interesting thought experiment, and maybe it'll lead to something. You know, I'm not going to condemn you. I'm not going to be the one to say, oh, my God, I can't believe you said that. So, go for it. Let me know what they say when you get closer and whether you ever get to a point where, you get a good response. It's not that I don't love cats and dogs. I love cats and dogs as much as anybody. But it does seem silly that if there's a society that eats them, and we have so many of them that we're just throwing them away and just, having to go through all this to do that, that some common good comes out of it. I get the argument anyway. I may not do it, but I get the argument. Last half hour, open lines, coast to coast. This is Ian Punnett. So back to your open line calls. Remember, you can link up to all of our guests very easily just by going to coasttocoastam.com, where you can also sign up for the newsletter. You can keep track of what George is going to be doing next week, look ahead at the shows on the way, and plan accordingly. at coasttocoastam.com. Some great news stories and photos up tonight, too. And then tomorrow night, Holy Ghosts. Looking forward to the story of one not-so-good Catholic boy who moved back into his childhood home only to find out that his mom had been right all along. There were ghosts there, and how he reconciled that with his worldview, what he experienced coming up tomorrow night, then Field of Screams afterward, baseball ghosts, Sunday night on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Your calls next. We'll start with Anna in east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Anna, are you in Pennsylvania? Is that where you are?
Yes, Nanticoke, okay. Pennsylvania.
Glad to
have you. WYOK land.
Yes.
I'd like to dispute the claim that cat people tend to be neurotic. I have cats. I love all animals. Don't get me wrong. I love all animals. But to own a cat, you can't be a person who isn't self-confident, because a cat is not going to stroke your ego with tons of obedience. And they will not follow you out of loyalty. You have to be loyal to them. I tend to be nocturnal. Cats are nocturnal. It's a good fit.
I'll go along with all this. Just know that it wasn't my research, and it wasn't just my opinion. They actually did a survey of about 5,000 people or something like that, and using these profiles, these personality profiles,
I will grant you there are a lot of people who wouldn't put up with an animal lounging on the dining room table or the kitchen table or standing by the stove trying to assist you with cooking. And if they want to call that neurotic, then most cat lovers are forced into that position.
Sure.
But they're just a better fit for some people.
I understand that. I say tell it to the, buy the book, find the researchers, and give them a piece of your mind and let them know that's how you feel about it. Wild card two, let's go to Jefferson City. It's Mike in Jefferson City, Missouri on Coast to Coast. Mike?
Hey, Ian, how are you doing tonight?
Couldn't be better, thank you. Where do you want to take us?
Oh, I am a deer hunter. I'm an avid hunter. I've been hunting for 20 years of my life, and last year was the first year I didn't get to go hunting.
Sorry to hear that.
Once you miss it one time, it's an easy excuse to start missing it.
Well, you got it. I know the hunters I know, if they had to take a year off for one reason or another, they get back out there as soon as possible.
Well, I work for the railroad, and we run out of time to hunt, so that happens.
Okay. So go ahead. What'd you want to get to?
Well, anyway, I live in Missouri, and we have a really good deer hunting availability. They claim deer can overpopulate. I kind of halfway believe it. I never killed a deer for my first 15 years of hunting, but I always bought a deer tag because I felt it gave to the program. Anyway, big deal is it's kind of a family thing for me. It's why I enjoy it. I get to spend time for family.
Sure.
And there is there's certain aspects to it. My first deer I killed felt bad. It cried for its mother, and it was horrible.
Okay. Well, appreciate that, and I hope you get back into the deer hunt soon, especially if there's the overpopulation like there is in Minnesota, where deers are everywhere. In fact, deer are everywhere. We have them up and down our alley, and they literally go through the trash cans just like any other, they are treated like vermin in a way. They're a nuisance. They knock over the trash cans, go through it looking for stuff to eat. Not any different, but much bigger than the raccoons and possums. Cynthia is in Laguna Niguel, California on Coast to Coast. Cynthia?
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may cry. I have two stories about two kitties. One particular kitty, his name was Nigel, and I'm hoping to share this so other people who go through, have gone through, or will go through an experience that I have may learn from this. Nigel lived with us for 8 years. He was a wonderful, wonderful kitty. He was strong and he loved our dog, and he just loved life. And he, you know, he was just healthy and a wonderful companion. And we moved, and we couldn't find Nigel when we moved. We lived in San Juan Capistrano at the time, and we could not find Nigel.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked maybe only for a few days, and that's what I regret the most, was for the fact that I only looked a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, about a month later, I decided to drive past where we lived, and it was that there was a trail that led to our home that we lived in. And there I see him laying flat on the cement. And he was still breathing, but he apparently had been starved, and he had no water. I picked him up. I put him in my car, and I was crying so hard because I knew if I kept coming back, I would have found him. I took him to the vet. He said he was blind. His kidneys had failed. He had no food, no water. And for some reason, I had thought, where he was left, someone would take him in. Because he was friendly. I thought, most likely someone will take him in. But they didn't. And I took him to the vet, and I cried my eyes out and felt such guilt and remorse.
Right.
And I had to put him down. But the good part of the story is I learned a tremendous lesson. When we moved again, we moved temporarily to a friend's home, and it's up in the Lake Forest area.
Okay.
And fortunately, this particular man, he had a large home, and he always left his garage door just slightly open, and he had lots of, like, motorcycles in it, but lots of comforters and warm places where a kitty could sleep or be able to stay alive if they could find food. The experience I had with Nigel was, I'm going to find this cat, because Nigel didn't leave. I found him literally 10 feet away from the house where we lived. He kept going back to where we lived. He thought we would come back, the one that died.
I'm so sorry that happened to you. It just sounds awful, and you sound obviously like a very caring person, and I'm sorry that plan backfired on thinking that somebody would take him in. And that is a good lesson for other people to think ahead a little bit more on a move like that, so that doesn't happen to them. And Christian is standing by in the time that we have left, working on this toward the top of the hour on Coast to Coast. Christian?
Hey.
Hey.
Ian, I really enjoy your program. I enjoy what you have, but everybody has to say on Coast to Coast. I just think it's a great format. What I wanted to talk about was just a couple of little things. I had a dog named Fred before I moved into the nursing home because of health problems. And I sure hated leaving this dog. I mean, this dog saved my life 3 different times. I mean, that's kind of unusual to say about a dog, but I'm a severe diabetic. And he actually, I left a way for him to get out of the house if there was ever any time I was unconscious or whatever, and I'd gone into a diabetic coma a couple of times. He actually got the neighbor next door and brought her up to the house, and by him doing that, she knew what was going on and called the 911 and my parents and so forth, and I actually owed my life to old Fred. And I tell you what, he was, you know, more than a friend. He was my buddy, you know, and right now, shoot, I'd rather get a divorce and have Fred back than I have what I've got going on right now.
Well, yeah.
But another thing I was going to say, though, that you were talking about with the vegans and the vegetarians and stuff.
Right.
Now, am I correct in, I thought I saw this somewhere, that the evolutionists, I believe, don't think that man could have gotten from, well, let's say, caveman or Neanderthal type to modern man, made the jump, if it hadn't been for the fact that the Neanderthals, whatever you want to call them, started eating meat and started getting the protein from the meat to develop the brains to get us to where we are intellectually at this point.
Correct.
Well, if that's the case, then why are the vegans and stuff so, you know, who's to say that what we don't digest now will help our the people that come after us obtain even more or a greater sense of logic as their brains grow or their things materialize. Now, I'll take my call off the air.
It's a good question. Well, just I think it stands on its own. Not exactly sure how to respond to it because I'm not a vegan, but maybe somebody else who is wants to, and that's fine. There's a kind of logic to that I perfectly accept. I think we have the intellectual capacity today to theorize about how we feel about animals and to talk about life without animal protein. We can do that because we have the luxury of the evolution that led us up to it. So it's a little bit like being grateful to the soldiers that keeps things, you know, so peaceful that you can protest. Because if things weren't peaceful in this country, I mean, really weren't peaceful, you'd be spending too much time dodging bullets to protest them. You know what I mean? West of the Rockies, is it Mike in California on Coast to Coast? Do I have that right?
Hi, Ian. Yes. You know, earlier you talked about maybe sending somebody down to cover the miners coming out, and I've got a suggestion.
What's that?
From deep below the earth. Story with tonight's episode of I'm Only a Miner, Vote Me Out of Here.
Oh, I think that's kind of a funny idea. I mean, whether it's a, I think there'd be a great story there for a journalist to go down 2,000 feet. I bet you somebody somewhere has said, I'll go down there. If I lived in Chile, I know I'd be volunteering. I think that'd be pretty amazing.
Well, it's fascinating. You know, these guys aren't spelunklers, but they've been forced to be. And, you know, the tape that Art used to play where allegedly somebody put a microphone way down deep, like 2,000 feet into a hole.
Mel's hole, right?
Yeah, this lends much more credibility to that. I mean, I never had any reason to doubt it, but I guess that was the group that wasn't promised to get out by Christmas.
Right, that was the group. So what about, so we can say that the screams they hear down there, those are their own, as opposed to the ones they were recording, supposedly from hell, right?
I wanted to touch real quickly on the love-ate relationship that you were discussing earlier between people
animals.
Right. And it was mentioned about cannibalism. There's a restaurant in Reno, Nevada called the Donner Family Restaurant. And, man, I didn't even want to check the menu in that. But the rats, we seem to have a different, here in this country anyway, a different relationship with rats. Some countries, they do eat rats. And I've seen on some survivor programs where they'll eat them, not necessarily as their first choice. But, you know, the whole deal with experimenting on them to learn how much we are inclined to have things happen genetically or whatever from rats, which seemingly, you know, it doesn't seem at first glance that they would be that, it's counterintuitive that they would be that close to us. But I suppose that's why when they do these experiments, that's why they do them in a laboratory.
Right.
And the other aspect that, you know, these politicians that make all these laws and all, they ratify them. So there is quite this comparison to us and rats. And it's, you know, not so much eating, but learning from them in a different way. Now, I do have cats, which I have to take care of the rat issues, and they do a darn good job. But when they've caught birds, I've scolded them. They do seem to learn. The cats do go to the same bed, you know, for quite some time before they'll shift to another bed. So I do believe that they can go from one day to the next. And I want to suggest William Jordan, the author of A Cat Named Darwin. He's a biologist, and he was kind of in the same realm of not really believing animals had the same sentience as humans. But he calls the subtitle is How a Cat Turned a Man into Train Him to Be a Cat, essentially.
We'll take a look at that. That sounds interesting. Good. Thank you. Good suggestions. I'm just trying to squeeze in a couple other people for the top of the hour. Onto your thing about rats and food of last resort. My mother's second husband was a guy from Cuba, and he went back finally after not having been allowed to go back for 35 years or something. He went back, and I remember him telling me afterward there were no cats or dogs or rats on the streets of Havana where he was. Everybody was so hungry that everything had already been eaten, including rats, that there was just nothing left. The streets were just complete. He said, as a kid, there were dogs chasing cats, chasing rats everywhere, and they were just all gone. Hannah, first-time caller line, California, on Coast to Coast. Hannah?
Yes. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Well, this is great talking about the rats. I had a personal question about that, but first I wanted to, I might have missed it, but the whole issue of, you know, eating animals versus being a vegetarian, I just feel that economically you feed more people. It takes a lot of grain and wheat and whatever they eat to make a few steaks rather than raising a lot of crops to feed people.
Okay.
And
if people could get by on just carbs, that'd be great. The question is proteins, right? I mean, that's
right. And I've pretty much been vegetarian most of my life. I will eat meat, but it needs to be shredded up. If it looks like a body part, I don't.
You know, that's so much of what he gets into in the book is the number of vegetarians that are vegetarians except for, and then fill in the blank, and you're not alone. So real quick, then, what was your other point?
Okay. Then the other point was the more personal level on the personality types and, you know, versus, you know, what animals you have. I love all the animals except scorpions and black widows. But I've usually always had a dog. Or a cat. Currently, I have 4 rescue dogs, but I also love rats, and I find them to be very intelligent and loving. Sure. And
somebody's got to love them.
And so, was there anything in your research about people who raise rats, like rats?
Nothing in the research I saw, but, you know, there's a lot in the book about rats. So I think you might enjoy it. Take a look at it. Again, we were talking about a book earlier called Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat. It gives us enough time to get Keith on from West Virginia and call it a night live here from New York. Go ahead, Keith.
Oh, hi. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a vegetarian, and I was interested in this lab-produced salmon that they were making in the You know, I don't exactly know what it is that there is. It like a just mixing chemicals up, or are they growing bacteria, or how does that work?
God, hope it's not bacteria salmon. If anything sounds less appealing to me than eating salmon, it would be a bacteria made salmon. Yeah, you know what? I'm just out of time a little bit here, so I should just go online and Google that. You'll find more about that. Pretty easily. All of the different ways in which they've tried to come up with artificial meat and new ways that they'll do it, you know, even now as a way of making it a food protein source for those that need it. I think one of the most interesting things in the conversation we heard earlier tonight was that there are almost 4 times as many ex-vegetarians as there are vegetarians. People try it. The payoff isn't what they hope it is. That was my story, too. I was vegetarian for about a year and went back and haven't looked back, to be totally honest. But thank you, everybody, for your different points of view on that. Holy Ghost, I'll be doing Sunday night on Coast to Coast, Deus Tiamat, and I do, too.